Is this working? Is this on? No one can hear me? Okay, boots on the ground, I guess, is a good way to describe my capacity at the UCSD Human Stem Cell Core Facility. I'm oftentimes asked, what's the purpose of this core facility? And I just want to, in a nutshell, summarize it. Basically, what a big point of this is to, so to speak, lower the activation energy for people to get into this line of research. People who've done any work on human embryonic stem cells know that they're pretty tricky to work with. And the goal here is to help people to sort of facilitate the research and get them off the ground quicker. And so there's facilitating the research itself, but then also helping out with all the regulatory controls that are in place, IRB applications and escrow and MTAs to get cell lines. And so that, in a nutshell, is what the Stem Cell Core Facility is about. So, you know, if someone has ambitions to go into this line of work, you know, I'll be happy to talk to you about it and help out. But so today I'm actually talking about on a technology panel, which is not what I usually talk about. But I wanted to take that opportunity to talk about one particular technology that we're starting to develop in the lab right now. And I want to start off by, okay, is there a trick to this? Ah, it's over here. See, I shouldn't be in the technology one. Okay, so here's the challenge. I'm kind of back up. So here's just your standard colony of human embryonic stem cells. The challenge is, you know, for every stem cell is to understand this process of either proliferation. So here I'm just amplifying the cells into many more colonies, many more cells on one hand. So here it's proliferation, the cells simply dividing, but then also maintaining their pluripotency. So that's what stem cells can do, is those two things. And then on the other hand is this process of differentiation. And I'm sort of picked a couple pictures from microscope to show here, for example, the formation of endothelial cells, making little blood vessels inside embryonic bodies. We can also take these cells and coax them into neuronal cell types fairly readily, like Alexi already showed. It happens quite readily. And then then the goal also would be to make more advanced cell types, like your blood cells, red blood cells, or heart muscle, and for transplantation potentially. And you know, the goal is really to make all sorts of different tissues. And here, sort of highlighted by the muscles of. The point really is, or the challenge of this is to rather than have all these things happening at once or in parallel, is to only regulate one of these fates and isolate one of these events and drive that specifically. So at present, I just stole this from a paper sort of describing a protocol for making different neural cell types. And you can see that it gets pretty elaborate in terms of the timing involved to induce differentiation and the different cell types. And then there's also all sorts of media conditions that are added and growth factors and over time to culture these cells and get them to do what you want them to do. So this approach has been very valuable and it's very useful, but it's got its limitations in that you can only screen so many conditions. So we want to actually develop a platform where we can screen more conditions. So when you think about what kind of factors actually influence cell fate, there's a whole host of. So first, I would generally break it down into two categories. One is sort of the chemical environment, and that's the media that the cells are in. Then also the gas. So CO2 and oxygen levels can really affect how a cell is behaving in culture. Then there's growth factors, soluble little proteins that affect cell fate. The extracellular matrix is hugely important in this process too. It's a huge network of extracellular proteins in which the cells live, and they dictate what cells can do. And then in part of that extracellular matrix are also sugar molecules, and those are somewhat underappreciated by many people, but that's actually a huge component of the extracellular matrix. It's made up of these so-called glycans or proteoglycans. And they also regulate many effects, such as the effect of growth factors, their signaling range, and so forth. The other important component to that factors that influence the cellular environment and the cell fate, the sort of physical environment. And so there you could imagine such things as temperatures, the obvious easy one, but then also mechanical forces and whether or not a cell's, what kind of mechanical forces the cell is exposed to. So during embryogenesis, you can imagine, you know, gastrulation, there's cell movements and so forth that will affect what a cell does. And then also, during development, like this blood vessels form, you can imagine inside a blood vessel, there's blood flow that will also affect the fate of a cell. So, in sort of developing technology with which we can manipulate the cell fate, you want to basically meet a couple points. And so one is you want to be able to incorporate as many of these variables I just listed as possible, and you want to test them in a combinatorial fashion. So not just one at a time or two at a time, but multiple ones at different amounts, different concentrations, different temperatures, and so forth. So you need it to be medium to high throughput, and high throughput, it's probably a little bit too ambitious, but I think a platform that tests in the order of about 1,000 conditions would be useful. And you also want it to be really flexible so that once you've identified sort of a set of conditions that does something, you can actually then modify it really readily on that platform and expand on it. So a technology like this already exists, and this was spearheaded by Chris Flame, Xu Chen, and Sangeeta Bhatia. Sangeeta Bhatia now is at MIT. Xu Chen is in bioengineering, and Chris Flame was a graduate student who developed this platform. And so basically what this platform is, it takes advantage of just the simple glass, like a glass slide, to which are printed arrays of proteins. They're sort of robotically spotted onto those, and you can spot these, in replicates so that, that you can actually control for variability, experimental variability. There's sort of a cross-section, and then each spot is sort of, a different protein composition. The gel serves to sort of hold the proteins in place, and then also give it a little bit of a 3D structure, but then also to... The gel doesn't allow any cells to adhere to it, so cells will only adhere to where the cell where the proteins are. And here's sort of a DIC image of some mouse ES cells grown on this platform. So at this point, the present array that we have that Chris Flame developed is basically 12 little subarrays with spot sizes about 150 microns. And what they've tested is largely ECM components, laminin, collagen, fibronectin. And then on top of that, you can also mount a gasket on top of this that subdivides all these arrays, and then you could vary the culture conditions. So we actually want to expand on this technology a little bit more to encompass even more variables. And so if you just start out, so this is basically where we're at right now, having a single spot with ECM components. We can then on top of that, add the growth factors, also glycans, and the glycans will serve as sort of a means to retain growth factor activity. So once we have spotted these arrays robotically with just a regular DNA microarray spotter, then the human embryonic stem cells are seeded on this, and we have sort of preliminary data on this, saying, basically we can get human embryonic stem cells into single cell suspensions and grow them on these spots. And then you basically wait and let the cells settle down, then you can assay various parameters. And some of these things would be adhesion, you know, what kind of ECM growth factor mix can sort of favor the cells to stick down well. You can also assay proliferation, the maintenance of pluripotency, just simply by looking at OCT4 expression, for example, and then also apoptosis. You know, so any of these conditions, do they actually die? And then you could imagine taking these out further or longer, or maybe even pre-differentiating the cells by other protocols and then putting them on the arrays and probing these conditions and seeing how that affects overall differentiation. So then the other component that I mentioned, so the physical environment, the mechanical forces, and this is where bioengineering becomes really important and Xu Chen's expertise. So basically taking this array and they've made a little flow chamber and you can then flow media over this array and expose these cells to shear stress. And this has been done by bioengineers previously with mouse ES cells and shown that that can actually push them into an endothelial lineage. So this is another level of a complexity that we want to add to this platform. So the benefits of this cellular array, the way we've done it over the present day technologies, is that, you know, obviously we can screen many thousand conditions in a combinatorial fashion. It's robotics, so it's very reproducible. The data acquisition can be done automatically. It's a very small scale. Proteins that we need are very small amounts. Cells are very small amounts. In the case of human embryonic stem cells, that may not be as critical, but I think if you go into other adult stem cells and want to apply this platform, you know, having a small scale is actually very desirable. It's very cost effective because of the small scale, and it's pretty flexible to alter all sorts of conditions. So the applications are, you know, for us right now is to optimize and define culturing conditions for human embryonic stem cells. But I think, you know, adult stem cells, especially like the hematopoietic stem cell, which is hard to come by, you know, I think there's only 1 in 20,000 cells in a bone marrow. I think that's right. Correct me if I'm wrong. But they're very rare, so if you can get only 50,000 cells out of a bone marrow, you could then very readily assay them in this, on this platform. And then you can also, you know, it's flexible such that you can imagine doing also the screening assays too, adding RNAi molecules in the spots or proteins tagged with protein transduction domains, and then the cells will take it up. So it's amenable to that, potentially, too. And then, you know, so rather than, so that's sort of the biology end of it. But then, you know, I think from a signaling point of view, which is more like my background expertise, and this is actually what drew me to this technology, you could study signaling and combinatorial signaling. So there's many growth factor pathways, and they all interact, and they all do things in combination. And then being even more reductionist, you could study the role of single growth factors and the mechanism of action. And, you know, for people who know me and what I've worked on, I've never given a talk where I haven't mentioned the genes that are dearest to me, and those are the Wnt proteins. And so Wnt proteins are incredibly important. They've already been mentioned, I think, in the first three talks. And, you know, overexpression is, you know, has all sorts of different wacky effects, you know, cancers in mice and axis duplication in Xenopus. And then here's an assay of expanding hematopoietic stem cells. But then, you know, there's a dilemma here that these proteins are very hydrophobic and the extracellular space is extremely crowded. So that begs the question, how are Wnts presented in vivo? So, you know, some of you stem cell biologists may just, you know, why do I care? You know, or why should you care? And I think the important thing here is that Wnts are really important stem cell factors, and we've seen this in the previous talks. And but right now, so you can buy a select number of growth factors, of these Wnts off the shelf, and throw them on your cells, but, you know, that doesn't, if you get a negative result, it doesn't mean that they don't do anything, because that environment is hugely complex. And so this is a platform where we hope to explore how Wnts are actually active. So I just want to acknowledge, so the Human Stem Cell Core Facility is Greg Fredrickson, who's really instrumental in making all these cell lines, human embryonic stem cell lines, available to everyone. And then David Braffman, who's mentioned twice here, he's the graduate student that's between, you know, has one foot in each place, one in bioengineering, one in the Stem Cell Core Facility. and is really driving this project in this, together with Xu Qin, and then also in Xu Qin's lab, Julie Li and Hua Wang are involved in this platform, in developing this platform too. And then I want to acknowledge the earlier collaborators, and that's it. Thank you.
Thanks.
We have time for maybe one or two questions.
That was a really cool talk, I have to say.
Please use the microphone. We're recording this.
How hard would it be to modify that platform where you're subjecting the embryonic stem cells to a shear stress so that they would actually have you could flow material over them, but you would have a diffusion limitation of the nutrients down onto the cell so that you would actually prevent differentiation in endothelial cells, and you'd sort of have a bioreactor that would be just useful for kind of quasi-industrial production.
But yeah, so then that, you know, here the goal is really to screen thousands of conditions, right? So I think you're talking more about production and expanding. So scaling up some of these processes. Is
well,
that
actually being in a situation where you have like you have the advantages of the you know of the spot and ECM economics, but you know, you grow and you'd have even growing lots of little pads of cells. But you'd have you just essentially would free them from that shear stress, you know, which is kind of a well known endothelial cell differentiation. I was just thinking in terms of going to a diffusion giving the advantage of just the bulk movement.
Yeah, not entirely sure if I understand your question, but you know, I think the benefit is mostly of one of screening huge numbers of conditions, and once you identify a condition that's either pro-endothelial or anti, you know, then you can scale that up hopefully in some bioreactor kind of setting. So.
Okay. If we